The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory, America, Bonjour, Hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. It's chilly here. Oh, is it chilly? Last night I did an event downtown, left-right thing with Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post and MSNBC, and it was bitter cold. But I'm still glad Jonathan got the line of the night. He said, never have I been so glad to hear the sound of clearing tables and clinking glasses and silverware being collected. It was wonderful. It's the first in-person back and forth. I do it with Jonathan. I do it with Paul Begala. If you ever have an event, you want to have a sparky exchange, call up the Washington Speakers Bureau. But it was wonderful. Christmas is back inside the Beltway. And it's just wonderful after missing a year of Christmas. Going to get to the news of the day, much of which is about me, or actually about President Trump. It's not about me. It's just I asked him good questions in yesterday's interview. That interview, all of it can be heard at the interview with Hugh Hewitt. If you didn't hear it yesterday, it went around the world. Everyone talked about it. That's great. That's what President Trump does. I just know how to ask questions of him. But what I'm really juiced about is Angel Tree. I'm pretty excited this morning. I come down and check every morning what's gone on in the hour before the show. And here I find Ralston in Georgia sent $25. Great. And Peter V in Colorado spent $35. Great. Those are both a kid and a kid and a half who will have Christmas. The child of a mom or dad are in prison because of you two. Then I go a little bit further and I find Terry M. in Texas. $250. Thank you, Terry M. That's 10 more kids. So we're up to really about 13 kids being taken care of already before I open my mouth. And then Ralston D. in Georgia and Alan T. in Georgia both sent in $500. And all of a sudden, $1,000 is in there. That's 40 kids plus the 53 children taken care of this Christmas. Presents, a Bible, and a note from mom or dad who was incarcerated because of the generosity of this audience. So thank you. I want to begin my show just by thanking you. The show is a news show. It's a public affairs show. It's about what's happening in the breaking world of America and the world. And I'll do the rundown in a second. But it's also a show run by a Christian for Christians and other people of faith who care about the lost and the least. And these kids don't deserve to be left alone at Christmas with nothing except memories of mother and father. They get a note from mom or dad. That's the most important thing they get because of Angel Tree's work. They also get a couple of presents and a Bible. So thank you. Go over to HughHewitt.com. Go to the top. Click on that banner, the Angel Tree banner. Be generous. Thank you, thank you, thank you. News of the day. Well, first of all, my interview with President Trump yesterday, I'll replay most of it in the course of the show today in case you missed it. But Wolf Blitzer on CNN subbing for Anderson Cooper thought this was the key clip. Cut number 19.
But what about the former president? He talked about 2024 when he called into the Hugh Hewitt show earlier today.
If Donald Trump decides not to run in 2024, who out there will that base flock to?
If I do decide that, I think my base is going to be very angry.
So I'm asked about a possible
Wolf grabbed that. And I ought to get a commission from, you know, I produce shows for all the networks. Later on, John Kasich gets asked about, I think, the same clip, cut number 20.
Former president is clearly relishing the idea of yet another campaign. Listen to what he told Hugh Hewitt. Listen to this.
If Donald Trump decides not to run in 2024, who out there will that base flock to?
If I do decide that, I think my base is going to be very angry.
Well, it will, but they'll still have to find
somebody.
They
will be very angry. I think we have a couple of people that would be very good, but it's, you know, very early.
If you get hit by a truck, if a meteor hits Donald Trump or the Iranians get you like they want to, who do you want the Republican Party to nominate? People got to know.
I'll tell you about that someday soon, okay? I'll tell you about it.
Well, what about that, Governor? How worried are you that the former president is already trying to stoke anger among his base if he doesn't launch a 2024 presidential campaign?
Well, Wolf, the reason why he didn't mention anybody is he doesn't want to give anybody any oxygen. And if he doesn't run and is a crybaby, he'll try to be disruptive. And it will hurt the ability of Republicans.
Governor Kasich, why don't you just say he doesn't know or he's likely to run? I tell people my prediction. I'm not a prophet nor the son of the prophet. I think he's going to run. I think he's going to win the nomination. I know he'll beat Kamala Harris. But anybody else? I asked Jonathan Capehart last night who would be the replacement for Kamala Harris, because I don't think Joe Biden's going to run. I mean, I believe the president is infirm, don't you? And Jonathan got kind of huffy with me, which is fine. It's a good event. And Jonathan's very smart, talking about how no one should be down on Kamala Harris. Look, it's not me. It's the Democrats. I never voted for her. Eric Erickson, friend of mine, big radio guy, on News Nation with our pal Leland Vittert last night, cut number 18.
Eric, because you just have such a unique understanding of Republican politics, I want to get you on this. The Senate race in Missouri, largely seen as a primary race between the attorney general there and the former governor there who had to resign in disgrace. His name's Eric Greitens. Hugh Hewitt, about as prominent of a Republican radio host as there is, present company excluded, talked to President Trump earlier today about Greitens. Take a listen.
Don't endorse Eric Greitens. That's a nightmare, Mr. President. We'll lose that seat. But that's Hugh Hewitt's opinion, not yours.
Well, that's an interesting opinion. That's true. He's right now leading by quite a bit.
I know, but he will lose the seat. We will lose the
seat. I understand that. Okay. Some people feel that.
The president doesn't seem convinced, but it brings up this issue. How worried should Republicans be when they've got these great opportunities like the Latino poll that President Trump comes in and endorses primary candidates who have no chance of winning in the general?
There's a real worry. You've got Eric Schmidt and Eric Greitens, the battle of the Erics commented on now by Eric. And Schmidt is the attorney general. He's doing fairly well in the polls. Greitens does well with the base because he's perceived to be victimized. He was hounded out of office while he was governor. But that's a problem because Missouri does have a very independent-minded base of voters headed into the general election.
You know, Eric is right. Look, I got nothing against Eric Greitens, except he melted down on the show and I asked him very straightforward questions. Eric Greitens was about to be impeached because of his treatment of a woman in his basement who he bound, gagged, and, according to her, engaged in unconsensual intimate activity. He was wrongly prosecuted, I believe, by a crazed left-wing Democratic prosecutor in St. Louis. But it's a disaster in a campaign. I know this stuff. I've been doing this a lot longer than almost anyone. If Greitens is the nominee, in fact, Democrats will try and get Greitens to be the nominee. I don't know who's going to win. There are about 700 people in that. Eric Schmidt is tied with Eric Greitens right now in the most reputable poll. But Billy Long might get Donald Trump's endorsement. There are a couple other congresspeople who are running. I'm just telling you, Eric Greitens, take a seat off the table. Democrats are going to control the Senate. They control the Senate. They can put anyone they want on the Supreme Court. And yesterday, the big news that you don't know about is at the Supreme Court. There's a case up at the Supreme Court involving Maine, and you don't need to know much about it except that Maine doesn't want to let. Sometimes Maine is so big and so empty that they don't have a high school in a school district. So they give vouchers to kids to go to any high school they want, private schools. They can go out of state. They can go wherever they want. There are a lot of Catholic schools, a lot of Jewish schools, a lot of private schools that are non-sectarian. But Maine says you can't use that voucher for a religious school. That's unconstitutional. It's just Carson is the game of the case. It was argued in front of the Supreme Court yesterday. The good news is going to be another big win for religious liberty. Amy Coney Barrett said last year in an important case, we got to get past this terrible law that we've got called this terrible decision called Employment Division v. Smith. Justice Scalia's only mistaken case, and it was argued yesterday. And I'm very optimistic. Other rundown issues. Senate voted yesterday to repeal the mandatory vaccine. Two Democrats agreed with 50 Republicans. The mandatory vaccine is unconstitutional. 48 Democrats want to impose a mandatory vaccine on your business. That's 48 Democrats want to do an unconstitutional thing. Don't forget that. Schools are closing classrooms on Fridays. Parents are furious. New York Times. In the Telegraph, Boris Johnson is in deep trouble. Because more parties were held and more investigations are underway. The Tory rebellion grows over COVID B plan. Instagram had a huge and horrible day yesterday at the Senate hearing. And good, Instagram and all social media is going to get smashed up. Joe Biden is engaged in appeasement with Putin. He's calling talks with NATO on his behalf. Israel is, however, working with the U.S. to get ready to bomb Iran, according to the Times of Israel. And here's the key deal. Israelis are always ahead of us on Omicron stuff. If you get your, if you get a booster of the Pfizer, you're going to be safe. You're going to be fine. But we're going to need a fourth booster sometime next year. Omicron does not beat Pfizer, the two doses plus the booster. Remember that and come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. From the headline in the Times of Israel this morning, Israel, U.S. to discuss military drills to prep for worst-case Iran scenario. The story includes this line. A Wednesday report said the Israeli Defense Forces will hold a large-scale exercise over the Mediterranean in the spring with dozens of aircraft simulating a strike against Iran's nuclear program. I'm joined by Michael Oren now. You can follow him on Dr. Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh.
I am not optimistic that this administration will do anything serious about Iran. Are you?
I would doubt it. Maybe I'd be pleasantly surprised. I mean, it's kind of clear that this administration doesn't have a military option. You know, President Obama used to say all options are on the table, including a military option. The current administration says, you know, if talks fails, we'll look at other options, but they never say a military option.
I agree. Yesterday, President Trump on this show said that Iran would have buckled on the first day of a new term for him because they were close to crumbling. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I know for a fact that the major violations of the JCPOA did not occur under the Trump administration after 2018 when he pulled out of the JCPOA. The major Iranian violations only began when it was clear that there would be a different administration in the White House. And that administration was committed to going back to the JCPOA and not seeking, you know, not basically trying to replace it with a much better deal. So the Iranians knew that they could ratchet up the pressure and that the administration would, you know, basically keep on going after the Iranians. It's quite a bit surprised that finally the Americans walked away from the table. It's really the first time they've walked away from the table. We've had a situation where, you know, in this case, the customer has been running after the merchant rather than the merchant running after the customer. And, you know, Iranians simply ratchet up the price every time. Interesting what they do now.
What they do now will probably be to demand more from an appeasement-oriented administration, which we may give them. But these exercises over the Mediterranean, do you have any idea how many strikes would be necessary to cripple Iran? I know that the Russian naval base in Syria had warehouses near it that are no longer in existence because the Israeli Air Force hit them last week. That's been reported in the news. But that's one area of a country without a lot of anti-aircraft weaponry. I'm just not sure what Iran can do to the Israeli Air Force.
Well, they do have some advanced anti-aircraft systems. They shot down a civilian aircraft liner not too long ago, if you remember.
Yes.
They can hit things. And kill them. And so Israel will have to take that into consideration. It depends on the nature of the operation, if and when it happens, whether it'll actually be a kinetic operation with actual, you know, planes and bombs, or something, an operation of a different nature, say a cyber nature.
Oh, interesting. Now, the United Arab Emirates announced a purchase from France of a lot of French fighters. Are those stealth, Michael Oren, and does Israel buy fighters from France as well?
I don't know about the stealth, but I know that you know, the F-35 has stealth qualities, and the UAE has been buying those as well. Israel does not buy fighter jets from France. It hasn't since France declared a boycott of us under de Gaulle. This is right after the Six-Day War. That's on the eve of the Six-Day War. We actually fought the Six-Day War with French Mystère fighters and Oregon fighters. But the most Israel buys from another country is a training jet from Italy.
Okay, so this brings me to the question a very savvy person told me this week. UAE is buying from France because if Iran attacks the UAE, France is one of the few countries in the world with the capability and the will to come to the assistance of the Emirates. Do you agree with that?
It's possible. French have been very active. They've been active in Africa. They've been active in Libya. They've had some pretty muscular foreign policy in recent years. They've been less resonant. Remember, the French didn't go through the Afghan and Iraqi wars. They're not war-weary, as the American public is sometimes described. So they're in a different place. And France is always looking for an opportunity to demonstrate to the world that it's still a superpower. So, yes, it's possible.
All right, last question has to do with, again, Iran, but this time China. Yesterday, I had former President Trump on, asked him about the hypersonics. He said the Russians stole it from us, and the Chinese either stole it from the Russians or were given it by the Russians. Is there a worry on your part that has good founding that Xi will give Khamenei what he's got when it comes to hypersonics?
We have to take that into consideration. The Iranians have signed a $400 billion package with the Chinese, a $25 year program, which has a military dimension. It does. So in return for Iranian oil, the Chinese are going to be selling the Iranians all kinds of hardware. And we have to take that into consideration. By the way, no one seems to be talking about this with relation to the JCPOA, is that this China deal has very much weakened America's leverage on Iran. So I'm sure there's people in the Iranian inner circles are saying, listen, who cares about the sanctions from the United States? We got China.
Yep.
And we got more money from China than America could ever think of.
Michael,
so
that's exactly right.
Think about that.
Got it. And that's why we ask you every week to come back. I hope your Hanukkah was a good one, Michael. I hope you'll be back next week. Dr. Michael Oren, Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter. Read everything he writes because he actually knows what he's talking about. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour two of today's live broadcast from Inside the Beltway on the Hugh Hewitt Show is ahead. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. If you're buying gold, do it from Birch Gold. You can find Birch Gold at HughGold.com. I'm glad that they're sponsoring the podcast, but more importantly, I'm glad you're looking at making sure that your investment portfolio is diversified. Wealth is made in concentration and preserved in diversification, and you should diversify a part of your portfolio, 5 to 10% in gold. You can do that by rolling over a portion of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver and other precious metals depository maintained by Birch Gold, or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box. Either way, do it from Birch Gold, which you can find at HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's HughGold.com or text my name Hugh to 474747. Now enjoy this podcast.
We three kings of Orient are bearing gifts.
Welcome back, America. Wherever those kings came from, Admiral James Stavridis has probably been there first. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
Doing great, Hugh. I'm wearing my orange tie in a small homage to the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, which threw out the Russians. And let's all think about Ukraine a little bit these days.
We are going to talk a lot about Ukraine, but I have to start with you with a very difficult topic, Admiral. My friend Ward Carroll posted this morning the news that I had heard about through the Navy network, that Commander Brian Bourget, I hope I'm saying his name right, died during a training evolution with SEAL Team 8. And a lot of people in the military don't make it through training. It's not always bullets and bombs that kill people. It can be training evolutions, especially in the special forces. You're an admiral. You've had to deliver a lot of bad news to a lot of people. What do you tell a civilian to do in a situation like this when they know the family?
Be honest. Talk to them, reach out to them. It's funny you mention the accident. I was literally emailing just before coming on air to the two-star admiral who commands all Navy SEALs, Wyman Howard, a superstar flag officer, super reputation, and just reaching out to Wyman, and next I'll reach out to the family. And the more of us who do that, the better. He was a superstar Naval Academy graduate. I'm proud to say he started life in the Navy as a surface warfare officer, went to surface warfare school, served on a minesweeper, and then made the jump into special forces. Highly regarded. Looks like it was a fast roping accident. It's just a reminder to us, Hugh, that there's dangers on the front line and there's dangers while you're in training, and we should all grieve for him, and if you know or can reach out to the family, please do so.
Yeah, I do not. I'm glad that you reached out to Wyman. The Howards and the Taussigs are old pals. So Betts, in fact, the other Admiral Howard will be coming over for dinner fairly soon. And I know it grieves everyone up and down the chain of command. I just don't know that civilians know what to do. And my friend Rabbi Kushner used to say, show up and shut up when somebody dies. And that's, I think, the best advice I've ever had. Show up and shut up. Make sure that they know you're there. But I wanted to hear it from you. Now, Admiral, let's talk Ukraine. President Trump, former President Trump on this show yesterday said the only thing Putin fears is war. So how do we deter him if we don't want to go to war?
Well, I disagree with President Trump. I think that Putin fears any number of things. He fears looking diminished on the world scene. He fears a backlash and within his own country. That's why he's tried to kill the leading opposition figure, Alex Navalny. He fears NATO. War, I suppose, but he fears more and more NATO deployments on his borders. He fears nations like Ukraine or Moldova or Belarus pulling away from Russia and becoming more aligned with the West. So I think there's quite a bit that Putin fears. And what we ought to be doing is playing on those fears. And that means threatening and ultimately making additional NATO deployments to his borders. It means using cyber to penetrate his command and control, which he also fears. He fears revelations about his own personal involvement and investments overseas and those of his immediate circle. So there's quite a bit we can do to deter him. I think those are the right steps. We'll know in 30 to 90 days whether our president's message landed and did deter him. We ought to continue to worry about it and keep a close, as it would say in the Navy, a weather eye on those deployments.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that term before. This morning in the Financial Times, very reputable newspaper, headline is Joe Biden makes diplomatic concession to Russia with NATO talks plan. And the story by Katrina Manson, Max Sedin, and Henry Foy begins. Joe Biden has made a significant diplomatic concession to Moscow designed to prevent an invasion of Ukraine, signaling he wants to convene meetings between NATO allies and Russia to discuss Vladimir Putin's grievances with the transatlantic security pact. Now, I call that appeasement. What do you call it, Admiral?
I call it carrots and sticks. So the sticks are the things I just mentioned, additional troop deployments, use of cyber, massive intelligence, support to the Ukrainians with defensive but lethal weapons. Those are the sticks. The carrot could be a conversation. I didn't hear anything in there that leads me to believe there's appeasement on the table, but rather a conversation with Russia, keeping lines of communication open. So let's give it some time. I think we'd all agree, as Churchill said, that jaw, 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 you know, talking is better than war, war, war. So let's keep talking. And so far, no tanks have rolled across the border. The more deterrence we put in place, the less likely that is. But I'll close with this. We need to be ready if he does go across the border with exactly what we're going to do.
You know, Admiral, I think Jake Sullivan doesn't ask me my opinion, but I think if he did, I'd say, why don't you wink out one of his investment portfolios? Don't, you know, we can disintermediate money. George W. Bush told me that in the Oval 12 years ago. We were talking about Iran, is that the United States can disintermediate people with their money in a hurry. We know where it is. We don't know where all of it is, but we know where a lot of it is. If you wink out, I mean, blink out, erase $100 million of Putin's billions, doesn't he get a message?
Absolutely. And by the way, it's not just Putin. It's his inner circle. It's the Sergei Lavrov and Dmitry Rogozin and those who are close to him and around him and part of his succession plan. Let's take the gloves off, at least in a demonstration way. And not only can you blink out finances, but you could also have a reveal of where that money is parked. How did it get there? All of that, I think, is something under discussion, and it should be. And so we've got to do that piece, Hugh, that personal sanction. But I think we've also got to look very seriously at sanctions on oil and gas and financial, sometimes called secondary sanctions, which sanction entities who do business with Russia. You know, it's not going to affect Iran or China, but many, many nations do business with Russia. Russia likes that. That's another area for sanctions. I think that's the real stick that we hold over Vladimir Putin, and showing him our ability makes some sense.
Now, Admiral, yesterday, whenever you talk to the former president, he'll make news whether he knows it or not, or whether people realize it or not. And by the end of the evening, Maggie Haberman and Ken Dillian had figured out that what the former president said to me about hypersonics was actually the newsiest thing. He said Russia had stole it from us, hypersonics, and that it either given that information to China or China had stole it from Russia. And there's no honor among thieves, of course. Moreover, that there's possibility of a mole in the United States. And I thought I heard James Jesus Angleton's body turning over in the grave. I don't know if you read that or not. What do you think about the idea that the hypersonics came from us?
I think it, personally, I think it's unlikely, because we're, in my view, from everything I can see and from my own work with a variety of entities today, we're actually behind China. So since I believe that we're behind China, China's actually demonstrated hypersonics, it seems unlikely to me that somehow our plans were stolen, washed through Russia. And by the way, I think it's unlikely that Russia would then share them with China. That's extremely unlikely from a wide variety of reasons. So I don't find that plausible. Now, what I do find plausible is there are active espionage, industrial strength versions going on of Russia and China looking at us, and frankly, us looking at Russia and China. So I think there's probably less news there than meets the eye. But again, the idea that the plans would go from Moscow to Beijing, I don't buy that. Russia wants to maintain their own lead. I think these are three separate efforts which are moving rapidly in Washington, Moscow, and Beijing. Hopefully we can keep up with China.
I did confirm with a member of the Trump inner team that he threw a lot of effort into our hypersonic capability midway through the administration, and that we are in hurry-up, catch-up mode. I think what he was saying is that he thinks China stole it from Russia. And if anyone thinks that China and Russia are buddies, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying what the president said is either they got it from somewhere, the Chinese didn't invent it. Maybe they did. I don't know. Last question before I ask about the Sailor's Bookshelf, Admiral. I'm really down on these Olympics. Genocide is underway, and Xi is a killer, and I told that to the president yesterday, and he agreed. He said there are things we can do more than boycotting the Olympics. The Carter boycott didn't work. What do you think about corporations having anything to do with these Olympics?
Tough call. I think a lot of CEOs are wrestling with that one right now. People look back to the 36 Olympics in Berlin. I think it's a long, hard swallow for any CEO. They all desperately want to stay out of the politics of this, but at some point, eventually, they're not going to be able to.
Yeah, genocide is genocide, and history is always watching. Now, Admiral, let's talk about the Sailor's Bookshelf. There's a box I'm not allowed to open at my house, and I've only asked for one thing, which is the Sailor's Bookshelf. How is it doing?
It's doing very well, Hugh. It came out number one in Amazon new release in the naval military category, which is where it is largely parked. And it's also sold out on Amazon completely. The publisher is working. Yeah, I know, exactly. The publisher is working very hard. You can go to the U.S. Naval Institute Press, U.S. Naval Institute Press, the actual publisher, and you can get it. And then third good indicator is just many, many friends emailing kindly saying how much they're enjoying the book. As you know, the subtitle is 50 Books to Know the Sea. And so it's kind of a compendium. It walks through great fiction like The Caine Mutiny Court Martial or Moby Dick, classic books of the sea. But it also looks at great nonfiction, Alfred Thayer Mahan. And, you know, as we look around the world today, so many of these conversations you and I have, it ends up going back to the sea and finding You know, the Mediterranean matters. The North Atlantic matters. If we go to war with China, it'll be the South China Sea. We're not going to send a land army to Asia. So I think it's an appropriate book for this moment and a chance for sailors to refresh themselves, but also those who have not spent time at sea to learn a little more about the oceans.
Let's plug the United States Naval Institute again, Admiral. The worst words an author can hear, I heard them only once in my 17 books, were out of stock. That's like the worst thing ever. So you're not out of stock at the United States Naval Institute, right? If they go to usni.org?
You bet. Check it out. You can get a copy today.
Thank you, Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Admiral. usni.org. Let me remind everyone, relieffactor.com, terrific sponsor of the show. Never out of stock. That won't happen to you. It will not happen to you if you order relieffactor.com. I'm never out of stock because I always like to get out there and move around and zip around. It is cold inside the Beltway, but I'll still be out there slogging through, I think, 3 today. Yesterday was 6. Today will be 3. And Saturday I'll see, gosh, I need sunshine. I need some sunshine. I don't know what the weather forecast is for Washington, D.C., but relieffactor.com makes it possible. Even if you're busted up a little bit and aching and feeling bad, relieffactor.com, nature's natural anti-inflammatories are all combined in relieffactor.com's packet. Icarine, curcumin, resveratrol, and omega. 4 pills, easy to swallow, beautifully designed packaging, wonderfully designed so that it can go down easy and you can take them with lukewarm coffee or water. Relieffactor.com. Jim Talent joins me next to talk about the late Bob Dole from the Bipartisan Policy Senator. Jim Talent comes in. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, joined by Senator Jim Talent, retired former United States Senator from the state of Missouri. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine. You? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. I was at an event with General Stanley McChrystal and Keith Kroc on Wednesday night when they paused to remember Bob Dole and Fred Hyatt. Fred was my colleague and my boss at the Washington Post, and I talked a lot about him, but I was waiting for you to come on and talk about Bob Dole. Your thoughts on the passing of a great American?
He was a great American and one of a generation of great Americans, and I think one of the two best Republican majority leaders in my time in Washington, the other being the current one, Mitch McConnell. He knew the Senate, and he knew how to work his way around the Senate, and that's one of the toughest jobs in Washington. It really is. So, and Fred's passing was, of course, in a way, you know, because it was so shocking, worse. But, we lost a real patriot in Bob Dole.
Now, in his latter years, we didn't see him much except for a famous picture of him being helped to stand and salute George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. To me, they were ferocious enemies, right? I mean, political enemies, never on a person, but they were ferocious battlers with each other. Tell them to stop lying about me. Bob Dole's wit always came a little sharp sometimes. But I love that picture because it shows at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't
well,
matter.
Well, in that generation in particular, they were. In fact, there were a number of real statesmen who fought it out over several presidential elections. But they were friends and they respected each other, you know, co-warriors during World War II. It was a different generation. And you know, I've thought to myself a lot, you, that one of the explanations for what's happening in Washington is that not only is that generation gone, but the cohort that followed them and that learned from them is also now largely gone. And so we're sort of, in a sense, reverting back to the mean of American history, which has been where the politics have often been pretty petty.
But you know what's happening is that the new generation of people who have served in conflict are rising up, and I think they will steady the institutions very well. Which brings me to today's story that Lindsey Graham is mad at Mitch McConnell on the debt limit. I personally think the debt limit is a loser. The president, former president, was on the show yesterday. He thought we should fight on the debt limit. Right now, the Republicans are poised to win everything if we nominate good candidates and we don't screw up. So this is one of those prevent defenses time. The former president wants to always attack. I think the leader is right. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. And so what McConnell has done is maneuver the Democrats into a position where they are the ones who are going to raise the debt limit to support the spending that they're inflicting on America, that most Americans don't even know what it's for. I mean, I've never seen so much policy that almost directly about spending money. I mean, the policy is to go out and spend enormous amounts of money. I mean, normally the policy is, well, you know, let's go out and let's do something about student loans, or, you know, let's provide this, or let's support the defense budget or something. So, no, I think he's maneuvering them quite effectively, and he's hedging against the downside risk that you mentioned, you know, that we will be seen as that the Republicans will be seen as people who don't want the government to work, which, you're right, is a loser. I don't know how many times you have to go down that road before we realize it's a dead end.
And I got to tell you, the only thing that can save the Democrats right now would be a default that landed us in a recession, that landed us in a stock market collapse. Now, the Democrats own everything. Their name is on everything. They've signed every check. They've made every bill. If we force a default and that default has any serious consequence, it changes what is a generic ballot that looks as good for Republicans as it had since the first election. Under
Obama. And apart from the politics of it, it's bad policy. Yes, we need to do something about the debt, but a default is not the way to do that. And so, now what I would like to see is constructive policy addressing the debt. The Republicans have worked on that from time to time. Ryan did a lot of that in the House. But no, we don't want to precipitate some crisis that's going to hurt the American people. I think this has been that he's maneuvered very effectively. And I'll tell you, it's extremely difficult to be a leader in the Senate. It really is one of the I served in both bodies. It's just a light years different from being in the House.
I think the Leader McConnell is the best leader that the Republican Party has had in my lifetime. I know a lot of people take cheap shots at him because he's a big target and they raise money off of it and they monetize hating McConnell. I love McConnell. I would do whatever he suggested we do in the Senate because he knows that body and its arcane rules. And Jim, tell how long does it take you to even learn the rules there?
It takes a long time. And he's tough as nails, too. But very reasonable in the way he expresses himself. Some of his speeches that he's, you know, he'll go down the floor periodically, give a speech about what's going on, dissect it. And I always listen. I did when I served. I mean, you know, so, yeah, I agree with you. And I also think it would be good if we got ready for the cycle by backing away from the circular firing squads.
100%. Let's go nominate strong candidates and get the majority back, because nothing happens until you win a majority in the Senate and the House. Jim Talent, follow him at Jim Talent on Twitter. Thank you, my friend. Talk to you next week. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour three. If you missed all of President Trump's conversation yesterday, the part that was off air, I'm going to replay the part that was off air on air in the next hour of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.